Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. So tonight there is an event. If you're local, hopefully you can attend. If not, hopefully you'll be able to get a little bit more insight. We're trying to get our guest on for today. But it's kind of a follow-up to what's been happening here in Florida with the pardoning of the Groveland Four that occurred after Governor Ron DeSantis took office as governor this year. So anyway, tonight at 6 at St. Mark AME Church on Bruton Boulevard in Orlando, the Central Florida Urban League is organizing a discussion of racial and religious prejudice and steps to come after this pardoning that has occurred. If you recall, last year I told you about a event, I guess it was a showing I went to, and we did have someone on also to talk about the Groveland Four and what happened. So this is kind of they've been pardoned, and there's still some discussion in terms of whether or not a pardoning should have occurred or whether or not some, an exoneration should have occurred or what should have actually happened. So we're hoping to get Central Florida Urban League, Glenn Gilveen, on with us today. But in the meantime, the number, if you have anything that you want to talk about, is 516-387-1944. That's 516-387-1944 while we wait for Mr. Gilveen to come on. There are going to be a panel of writers, religious leaders, and legal experts that will explore, according to the information I got, how to build on the Groveland Four decision and combat hatred that divides us today. The discussion, according to this, comes after the director of FBI said white supremacists and violent extremists pose a, quote, persistent and, quote, pervasive threat to the United States. It also follows violence increases at places of worship here, as you know, and not necessarily here in Orlando, but here in the United States, such as the church burnings that occurred in Louisiana recently, and abroad, and some of you know about the incident that occurred in New Zealand. So that's what we're going to be talking a little bit about today, or hope to be talking about today. The number is 516-387-1944. In the meantime, I'd like to get your insight. Have you yourself seen an increase in, displays of prejudice, displays of discrimination? What have you noticed? What would you think should be the resolution to that? I'd really like to get you guys to call in and try to get your opinion on it, because we may hear a solution that we've not heard before or something that we've not considered before. I have a quote from Central Florida Urban League's president, Glenton Gilveen Jr., who is the president and chief executive officer of the Urban League. He said that this evening will mark an important first step in addressing the very real issues of prejudice that still affect society today. It will only be through an open and honest discussion that we can begin to heal old wounds and create a brighter future for our children. And the chair of the Central Florida Urban League, Dick Batchelor, who couldn't be with us today, he said, we are inviting an opportunity for open, candid, and honest discussions on how specifically our communities can move ahead on race and religious prejudices that still exist. So it's only until sometimes you don't want to go back. You don't want to revisit stuff, you know, that makes us uncomfortable. But it's only until we can get into the trenches and address these issues that we're going to get some sort of resolution. Spectrum News 13 anchor Tammy Fields is going to moderate the panel. Includes, according to this Pulitzer Prize-winning author, Gilbert King. He has a book called Devil in the Grove that helped lead to the pardon of the four black men accused of rape by a white woman in Lake County in 1949. Also on the panel, Shannon Green, who's a columnist from the Orlando Sentinel, Pastor Roderick Zach from Rejoice in the Lord Ministries and president of the AACC, Belvin Perry, former chief judge, Florida Ninth Judicial Circuit, Dr. Randolph Bracey, Jr., Dean, School of Religion, Bethune-Cookman University, Paul Perkins, Jr., attorney and son of co-counsel in the original Groveland 4 case, Dr. Joel Hunter, who is a former senior pastor of Northland, a church distributed, and the three wise guys, faith community leaders, and 90.7 WMFE radio presenters. So those are going to be part of the discussion tonight. The number is 516-387-1944. Hopefully we'll get Mr. Gilzine on soon. And just like I said, I did see the movie last year. It was by WUCF, and it was in Winter Garden at the Garden Theater. My husband and I did go in a chance to really get a little bit more knowledge. A lot of times we hear stuff on a cursory level. It was a matter of getting more knowledge. By the way, just to let you know, if you haven't heard, the lady who was the victim in the case of the Groveland 4, in spite of all of the evidence to the contrary, out there is still saying that, still sticking by the story that she was raped by these four black men. Time will only tell, and even if we don't get necessarily the whole truth, you know, God knows what happens, and he'll deal with it accordingly. So we'll see what happens there. We're going to take a quick break. We're hoping to get Mr. Gilzine on. In the meantime, if you have something you want to discuss, topics on your agenda today, I know you all, some of you anyway, are, a little bit disturbed by what happened on the court, talking about the basketball court last night, that comeback. Some of you are questioning and scratching your head and wondering what happened with the Golden State Warriors. So you can't just count the Golden State Warriors as having another victory coming up. So how did you feel about the outcome of the games last night? You can talk about that if you want to, but we're going to take a break. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the argument. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Spreading the word of the Lord through music ministry on Gospel 107. We're live on NHISG 101.1 every Sunday. Gospel music from legends Lee Williams, Rance Allen, and Shirley Caesar. Join us for Sunday service delivered by Pastor Regina Johnson, Pastor Russell Moore, and Pastor Johnny Ray Noble. Bible study with Pastor Aaron B. Williams. And Christian Talk Radio with Pastor Annetta Watson, Pastor Annie Sally, Pastor Warren Sally, and Benita Coney. Gospel 107, every Sunday on Never Had It So Good 101.1.
It's the sweetest name.
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. I was talking a little bit about tonight's event that's coming up after the Groveland Four that the Urban League is hosting here in Orlando at St. Mark AME Church this evening at 6. Hope you get a chance to go out and take a look, take a listen and see what's going on. The number here, if you want to call, is 516-387-1944. That's 516-387-1944. In the meet, is someone on?
Yes.
Hello.
Hello, Lady G.
Hey, how are you? Good morning.
Okay. Good morning. Good morning. Out was just out in the neighborhood talking about that same thing, the Groveland Four, making sure members in our community get over to the symposium this evening.
Yes, it should be a packed house. The Central Florida Urban League is sponsoring it. Also, the Holy Cross Memorial Resource and Education Center of Florida is on board with that, and then NAACP, the African American Council of Christian Clergy, Islamic Society of Central Florida, and the African American Chamber of Commerce, and the Faith Council of Central Florida. They're all on board with this, and so it's nice when everybody can come together on an issue, you know, at least to try to have some open dialogue. You know, it's a shame, though, it always has to, whether it's, you know, current or, you know, before now, it's a shame that it has to be around tragedy. By the way, Stephanie Dukes was on with me, and so I wanted to let everybody know that you were here. We're still trying to get Glenn Gilzine, who's the president and CEO of the Urban League, to come on. But in the meantime, so this is the thing that someone mentioned, and I agree with, is that how do you pardon someone for a crime that they did not commit? You know? Because in at least in one of the cases, there's some question in terms of whether one of these young men was even on the scene at the time that the crime took place. Supposed crime took place. So, you know, I mean, does it end with the pardons, or, you know, and I guess that's one of the things that they're going to look at tonight, but does it end with the pardons, or should there be further investigation? What's your take, Steph?
Well, I believe, if I remember following the situation correctly, that the governor was supposed to sign a special commission or committee to look into it further, to examine just the things you're saying, because there was reportedly a young man who was not there, was charged for it, and to see, you know, it's kind of like the Innocent Project.
Right.
Where they have to go back and look at it and see, you know, how do we overturn a wrongful conviction? Dealing with the legal systems, like, okay, if it was wrong, how do we overturn it
But first we have to prove that it was wrong and mm-hmm. then go into. So that was the next step that I believed our governor did do. I have to research and see exactly has that commission formed yet and mm-hmm. who's all on it to look into it. Because then the other thing that came with that was the, okay, how do we now provide financial compensation to these families? And, you know, money is always the root of whether to do the right thing or not. Mm-hmm. And several of the conversations became, well, we don't need to go that far because we don't have no money to pay the family for the damage of their lives. It's like, hold up. If something happened to your family, you wouldn't feel that way.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I'm going to research while we're on the air here and see if I can find where the commission has actually taken place or how far did that actually go. But that the last time, and I'm quite sure tonight that they will be talking about that exact thing.
Right.
So it's quite interesting. I was listening to CNN yesterday, and they were talking about, you know, when you turn
reparations
and do reparations. Yes.
Yeah.
And they were saying that, you know, Americans, the 40 acres and a mule condition had not been satisfied, and that, you know, why would we do that? And that, you know, that was over with. We should be able to move on. And the young lady brought about, she said, when the Holocaust happened, Germany had to turn around and has paid those families, and I forget exactly how much money. And she said, even here in America, when the Japanese were put into those camps, we had to pay reparations to them.
Mm-hmm.
And now no one wants to deal with the fact that African Americans are due the same. I found that to be real interesting.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of reparations, there's another issue, I guess you could say, that's come up with regards to reparations that I thought was quite interesting. There have been other sources. I'm going to take this one that came yesterday off The Guardian, but I had heard it the other day, about students at Georgetown University students. They took a vote to pay for reparations for slaves sold by the university. Okay. The colleges up in Washington, D.C., said the college sold 272 people in 1838.
Mm-hmm.
I'm posting this on the Jesus Power Hour Facebook page. The descendants would benefit from fees paid by undergraduates. Now, these are students. I think they're going to try to present it to the powers that be at the university, but they voted in favor of paying reparations to the descendants of enslaved people who were sold by Jesuit founders to pay off college debt.
Yes.
And according to this article, in 1838, Georgetown Jesuits sold 272 people who worked on plantations in Maryland. Slavery was abolished in the U.S. in 1865 after the Civil War. Debate over whether descendants of enslaved people should receive reparations is longstanding, according to this. But anyway, the results supposedly were released Friday showed 2/3 of Georgetown undergraduates who voted in a non-binding referendum said payments should be funded in their case by a fee that would apply to all undergraduate students. I'm waiting to see what actually happens with this, because I can just hear somebody's parent getting all upset because they're having to pay a fee for something that they feel that they had nothing to do with. But anyway.
Exactly. But isn't that shows, as all of the movements in America and around the world has happened, because of college students who have an open mind, who see things through the eyes of fairness and not clouded by the financial ramification of an incident, but look at it and say, this was wrong, and we have to make it right. It doesn't erase it, but
mm-hmm.
how do we now try and make some amendments to a religion, and in this case, a religion who they felt
mm-hmm.
should have known better than
mm-hmm.
to enslave someone else. And now
mm-hmm.
we want to then make financial gain from it.
Mm-hmm.
So, college is the best place in the world, I tell everyone, because there you can really...
You can have honest discussions.
Yes.
At least you think so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And kids, you know, the mind isn't kind of restrained to, oh, what is this person going to think? What is that political party's going to do? You're just free. That is true test of freedom, to form your opinion, have your opinion heard. So I love, that's what I love about school.
Yeah. And it says here, in an open letter to members of the Georgetown University Community College president, John DeGoya, I'm going to say, please forgive me if I'm not misspoken. Over the past 4 years, we have been working to respond to Georgetown's historical relationship to the institution of slavery and engaging with members of the descendant community of the enslaved people of the Maryland Jesuit plantations. Yesterday, our undergraduate students voted on a student referendum proposing an idea of a fund for descendants created by a new student fee that would apply to all undergraduate students. Noting that the favorable vote was non-binding, he says, this moment raises complex issues that we are prepared to grapple with and embrace. Our students are bringing attention to deeply held convictions that we take very seriously. You know, it reminds me, with the students and stuff, it reminds me of something that my mom used to always talk about in terms of prejudice among kids.
Mm-hmm.
She always said that prejudice was not, you know, born, it was taught, it's learned behavior. That
yes.
if you leave a child to their own devices, that they're usually the most loving, you know, people that you could be around. And, you know, I mean, they don't come with preconceived notions about a person. But if they
mm-hmm.
see you act a certain way or they hear you talk a certain way about someone else,
mm-hmm.
you know, then they tend to, you know, especially, you know, if they're like, well, if mom says this or if dad says that or mom does that or dad does that, then they must be right. And it's okay, you know, if they have that type, you know, that type of relationship with their parents or some other person that they admire and trust and love and respect, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So hopefully, you know, that this will have some sort of impact. I mean, you can't go and you know, make it all better. This isn't a make it all better type of thing, but it's kind of a, you know, let's see how we can go forward in a, you know, in a fair and reasonable and practical manner, you know, for everybody. Because what people don't realize is that when you oppress a certain portion of your society, you oppress your whole society because
mm-hmm.
you are failing to receive the benefits of the contribution of that segment of society. You know, it's for your enrichment as a whole, you know, and if you fail to understand that, then you lose.
Exactly. Because that's
yeah.
the part of being able to what we call community, unity. And if from unity comes that respect and realize that we are not all going to do things correct all the time.
Right.
But when we have found and been shown that, you know what, we can do this better or that wasn't the best way to do this. Now let's
mm-hmm.
do it a better way to make the change, to make the switch. And it's nothing wrong with saying, I'm sorry, I apologize, or you were right, I was wrong. You know, that's the hardest thing for people to say in the world. You know, I'm wrong.
Oh, yes.
You know, okay, you're right. That now I can see the other side of what you saw. And, you know, if we all could just realize that there's the times that you will see something clearly than someone else, and not let greed, you know, it goes back to, you know, those nice foundations that are laid out for us. You know, I'm looking here at the flyer where it says race and religious. You know, when we look at our religious foundation, and if we live by those things, you know, greed, don't let greed creep up on you, then money will not guide us to do the wrong thing. And sometimes it's greed for power that causes us to do the wrong thing. I'm quite sure when this, you know, I'm from reading the story and the parts of this, you know, the sheriff during that time had so much power that, you know,
and we're back on the Groveland story, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Going back to the Groveland Four, that the sheriff had so much power during that time that if he said it, that's the way it went, and boy jolly, it wasn't going to be any other way. And sometimes our greed to have that much power over a situation will cause us not to look fairly at a situation, not to hear the truth as it's being told.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I kind of circled our conversation back around to the Groveland Four, because it's a lot in there. Even when the pardon was presented, the lady, one of the victim, still stood by her claim.
Yeah.
Okay. And I, you know, it's not to denounce what she's saying, other than maybe this did happen to you, but could it possibly, it's the possibility that we have the wrong ones. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, at this point in time, anybody that's really expecting her to come forward and after all these years and say, yeah, I was wrong, I made a mistake, or I falsely accused somebody and I shouldn't have, you know, I doubt that it's going to happen at this point. I mean, and to look at it one way, at this point, she might be at a point where she's almost convinced herself that this might have actually happened even if it didn't.
You know,
because there's probably a lot of pressure on her to stick to the story.
Yes, and the unfortunate thing about that time period, there was a lot of cases, and including, as we know, part of the Rosewood story, that there were women who were either victimized or in relationships with someone else, and found it easier to blame it on a black man.
Mm-hmm.
Or a group of black men, if it had been a group of white men who were attacked her. There are just so many cases throughout history that we have found that to be the case, till when she says this, it sheds that doubt on her. And that's unfortunate that it's happened in history, that she would be placed up under such scrutiny, because it was the norm for women back in that time, so that they would not get the other person in trouble or get in trouble themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what makes it put her in an unfortunate position.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. When we come back, there's another thing that's coming up I want to talk about, another unfortunate racial incident that occurred that they're trying to, I guess, in some way kind of mark or commemorate. And we're going to talk about that when we come back. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am on with my friend Stephanie Dukes. The number, if you want to call in and join the discussion, is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944, and we will be right back. All right, we're going to keep going. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. The number, if you want to call in and join a conversation, is 516-387-1944. That's 516-387-1944. Stephanie, the other story, and I just posted that, I do want to try to get somebody on to talk about this too, probably in the next month or so, is what happened in Ocoee, the Ocoee massacre, the Election Day massacre in the 1920s. Earlier this month, Ocoee commissioners decided they're going to take steps toward erecting a marker dedicated to the victims of the Ocoee Election Day massacre of 1920. This was a unanimous vote to allow city staff to apply for a historical marker for the massacre through the Florida Historic Marker Program and to include it in the capital improvement plan for Lakefront Park. And I don't know why I'm thinking, I think this is happening in June. For those of you, and I have to tell people this because I always tell people when I'm doing, talking sometimes about real estate and about blacks and Ocoee, how, blacks who have been around here that for a long time, you're hard-pressed to get them to move to Ocoee, but younger blacks or blacks that don't know the story about what happened in Ocoee, I have friends in Ocoee and everything, and Ocoee is, you know, changing and developing and growing. There's still some old parts, too. But, you know, a lot of people that have moved there, a lot of African-Americans that have moved there, don't know the story. For those of you that
that was a lot when we moved here to Claremont.
What?
I said
what
that was a lot with moving to Claremont. My grandmother was like, "Oh my God, you can't move there." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And she says, "Oh no, the sheriff in Lake County." I say, "So what about the sheriff in Lake County?" You know, nothing about the Groveland Ford until she mentioned it. And,
right,
of course, you know, we were looking at the land and all of that. So then the issue became a little different. It was like, oh, okay.
Yes.
Now I understand some of the tension and everything that's kind of around in the town. And, you know, so I can understand what you're saying about, you know, Ocoee and people moving there.
I do too. Yeah, because when my husband and I bought our first place, we bought it in South Apopka near the Ocoee Apopka line, and didn't realize. Although it looked a little country, I'll just put it that way. I would use another term, but I don't want to offend anybody. But apparently, this was an area where. I think someone said that there may have been some lynchings or something. So we never really looked into it. We're like, okay, well, you know, we just gotta put it in God's hands and go forward, because we were closing on the place the day before we got married. And, you know, they're like, "Are you sure? Are you going to be okay? Are you sure?" You know, and we did have some incidents while we were out there. But, you know, I mean, when people realize you're, you know, standing your ground and you're going to stay where you're going to stay, you know, you know, after a while they get on about their own business and doing, you know, doing stuff. So, but anyway, what I was going to say about Ocoee, about the massacre, because I want to bring this up for some people that may not know the story. In 1920, let me find the story. It's not totally they don't have the whole story here, but it, from what I understand, there was an attempt to vote in Ocala,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and because of there was a guy named July Perry. I'm going to try to find the information on him and post it on him, but he was one of the people that was involved in this. But apparently, because of some shooting and all that kind of stuff, a lot of the blacks that were in Ocoee were eventually run out of town, either burned, their places burned down, or they just left. And it's according to this, it says details surrounding exactly what happened and how many were killed have been murky, but the event resulted in the murder of at least six black citizens by the Ku Klux Klan. And the exile of the entire black population in then unincorporated Orange County, which is now the city of Ocoee. So, now, this is my thing. I don't have anything against the marker. That's a nice idea. It's probably a good start. And you know, I've seen different things, you know, change and occur in Ocoee. But there are people who had land there that were run out of town, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm looking at the thing with Georgetown, and I'm like, well, what about these people who had land who had to up and leave because they were in fear for their lives?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, you know, how, you know, how, like I said, the market's a good start. Maybe they need to have some sort of discussion in terms of, is there something that can be done? Is there a way to trace people whose ancestors, whose predecessors used to live there, and
mm-hmm.
you know, come to terms, you know, find some kind of way to compensate these people, you know?
That's so true. I had the pleasure of meeting, there were two ladies who over the last, oh, maybe 13, 14 years, I forget exactly how many years, but they interviewed families and people in Ocoee and was back doing that time because they wanted to tell the story. And they ended up, they finally was able to produce a book, and I sent you the picture of the cover of it, because I have a signed copy of a book by Myra Kenny and Gail Waxman, and it's called Ocoee, a Novel. And the book actually won the President's Book Award winner for the Florida's Authors and Publishers Association, because it went to and they were able to recapture as much of the background and history and interviews from people during that time. And they were able to put in a book, but it was over 13 years of research and wanting to tell the story correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And it, because of their book, I would like to think that the Ocoee Commission, because these ladies refused to allow this story to die, and they kept it out in the forefront till the commission finally presented them with a proclamation. And I was trying to find the proclamation here, because I did ask her to send me a copy of it. But her this book, and they are going around at several book conferences. They spoke at a conference at the University of Florida a couple of months ago, telling every instance they can get to tell this story, they tell it.
You know, I think I worked with one of these ladies when I worked at the elections last year. I actually, while you were talking about it, I pulled it up and I was posting one of the articles about them on the G's Power Hour Facebook page, and I was like, okay. The name when you were talking, and then I looked at the picture. I'm like, that seems familiar. But anyway, yeah. I mean, I really appreciate people who go the extra mile and take the extra step and realize the importance of trying to preserve history and record it, whether it's favorable or not, you know, because you really, really need to know, you really need to keep up on stuff like that and, you know, not repeat the ugly stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the key thing. It's like, okay, we want to go forward on a more positive note, a more enlightened note on in terms of how we deal with each other and how we deal and how we deal with our past. You know, and I got to find out where the saying comes from. It's about those that don't know the history are doomed to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to find out where that saying comes from. But, yeah, I mean, the thing about it is if a lot of what's happening now with the reemergence of hate crimes, you know, the burning of the churches here, I mean, over in Louisiana and then also in I think it's New Zealand where they had the incident over there, you know, and it's all circulating around people and you know, my thing is, just as much as we all have this capacity to hate, we also have as much, if not more, of a capacity to love. Why are we expending all of this negative energy out there? It's not doing anybody any good. Even the person that is committing the crime, it's not doing that person any good.
Mm-hmm.
That person ends up getting hurt in other ways that they don't even recognize, but they get so consumed with the hate that they can't rationalize and everything. You know, it's like, channel that energy somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do something to help somebody. You know, if you don't like me, fine, but go and help somebody that you do like.
That's
okay?
It.
You know, go help some, because everybody needs some help of some sort. So instead of channeling all of that energy toward me or someone that you just can't get on board with in terms of, I mean, you resent me even being on this earth, fine. You know, we don't have to travel in the same circle. You know, go find somebody else that, you know, brings joy to your life and that has someone else that has a need, and go help that person. Instead of trying to figure out how you can hurt me or how you can hurt someone else.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. So, a thing just flashed up here on my for me talking about giving to the Notre Dame Fund.
I was going to talk about that after the break.
Okay.
Believe you me, I was. But we're going to try to take a quick break. This is G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. I am here with Stephanie Dukes. We're just talking about things that are going on, the event that's happening tonight after the Groveland for Race and Religion, talking a little bit about where do we go from here. That we were talking about that as well as some other things. Georgetown University reparations and the marker going up in Ocoee. Marking the riots. So if you have something you want to join the discussion on, the number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We do have another guest on. Go ahead, please. Hello? Is this Glenn? Okay.
Hello.
Hi, Glenn.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hey, hi. Okay, hi. This is Glenn Gobain. He's with the Central Florida Urban League. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Tell us a little bit about what your expectations are from tonight's event.
Absolutely. So first off, again, thank you for the opportunity to be on with you and your distinguished listeners. I'm really grateful for this opportunity. And just a quick history lesson, I think everyone is fully familiar with the role of the Urban League, but I'll just give a quick refresher. The Urban League is well over 108 years old, 109 years old organization that was created on the premise of helping African Americans as they moved from the South to the North, as they call it, the Great Migration. And it was more on the understanding of how do we prepare African Americans to compete for the opportunities within the Industrial Revolution during that time period. And as time went forward, we evolved into areas such as housing, jobs, education, health, and social justice. So tonight's conversation falls underneath the social justice aspect because of the historical significance of the Groveland Four and the work that we are doing with our elected officials, our community leaders, our faith-based leaders. And tonight's expectation is let's have a conversation around it, but more importantly, where do we go forward from here? I think when I logged on, I heard you say, you were quoting somebody that if you don't know history, you tend to repeat it. So it's important that we are, you know, take this opportunity to have the conversation, but then also start coming up with an action plan of what do we do next? How do we move the needle forward as it relates to our community? And I'm really excited about the event tonight. Last checked, I think we're well over 400 plus RSVPs. So it's going to be a really fun and great engaging event. A lot of people are going to be there, so get there early. And it's going to just be a lot of fun.
Do you have to RSVP for those? Is it too late to RSVP if you have that many people already?
Well, it's not too late to RSVP. I think the capacity is 500, so we still have like 100 seats left. But it's helpful to RSVP because then that will guarantee you a seat. We do know that some people are just going to show up, and we will have overflow rooms available. But for those who RSVP'd, they're guaranteed a seat in the main sanctuary.
Okay. All right. Good.
And if you're trying to RSVP, and I'm sorry for interrupting you.
No, go ahead.
If you're trying to RSVP, it's really simple. We created a tiny link. So if you type in the word tiny, tinyurl.com/Groveland4, then it will bring you right to the Eventbrite link, and then you can just RSVP. The event's free, but again, by being a ticketed, by RSVP and having your ticket, it guarantees you a seat in the sanctuary.
For sure. We're looking forward to that. And I have posted that link on the G's Power Hour Facebook page as well. So, now, after you have this event, is there something beyond this
that people can do or get involved in, or are there any local officials that are doing anything after this point that you're working with?
Yes, absolutely. So we're working with our – so the objective is during the conversation, it gives people an opportunity to, like, share their concerns, but then also provide next steps. And then what we would do is, on the information that's taken, the Urban League would be the change agent, for lack of better words, on taking those action items and then bringing them forward to our local government, our local business community, and our local nonprofit community, and finding solutions to some of the concerns. So for us, this is an opportunity to hear directly from our community that we serve, hear what the concerns are, create an action plan, go to the powers that be, and then reconvene and provide the results back to the community.
Okay. All right. And that's at 6 o'clock, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And St. Mark's on Bruton, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Thank you for taking time. I know you've got a lot of stuff going on today, but we really appreciate you giving us a little insight in terms of what's happening tonight. You know, we were discussing your event and the Groveland Four and the Ocoee Massacre and the reparations being discussed by Georgetown. All of these things coming to light right now. It's an interesting time.
It really is. It really is. But it's also a great opportunity as well to inform our young people and really come up with some great solutions to move our community forward. But again, I appreciate all that you've done to get the word out. I know a large segment of the individuals who RSVP'd and it's coming because of your work and your efforts. And I know for a fact that tonight we'll have a really rich dialogue with some action items. So again, thank you to you for the work you're doing. And I'm just really grateful for the opportunity tonight and today.
Well, thank you, and thank you all for taking on this issue and really, you know, shedding some light on it and giving people an opportunity to discuss it and move forward with it. Really appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. Take care.
You too. Thanks so much. Stephanie, are you still there? Oh, I guess Stephanie left me.
I'm okay. Still here. I'm here.
Oh, okay. Good. Okay. I did want to discuss the cathedral, Notre Dame Cathedral, which for me, this was just really disheartening because I actually got a chance to go. Our French club went to France, and we did go to Paris. We went to a few places. We did go to Paris, and yeah, I got a chance to go. And I was like, well, that really kind of, and I was trying to think back at how many years, and I was like, okay, that really was quite a while for
wow.
me, you know, because this is like our 11th grade spring break. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we went and it was a wonderful trip, but I just, you know, it just really made me stop and take an assessment of how long ago that was. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, it just, that's one of the things, too, that gets me about, and I love my city, but that's one of the things that gets me about my city is, like, I want to see some pieces of history along with all of the newfangled stuff that they're creating. I want to see some
mm-hmm.
things preserved, and I don't see a lot of that here,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the fire, you know, they managed to save some stuff, and I understand they managed to save the crown of thorns that they were believed to be a relic of the passion of the Christ. You know, this is the
mm-hmm.
place where they were saying a lot of people decide that they're going to take a vacation for Easter and go here to celebrate Easter services because, I mean, they still do have services at the cathedral of Notre
mm-hmm.
Dame. And I the person... They had this one girl who's an American girl that was a student over there, and her mother had come over there to spend some time with her. They were vacationing over there, and they were on, I guess, the River Seine, and they said they had passed it and everything, and she said all of a sudden, you know, she was taking video and started to see the fire and everything, and she caught when the spire fell and collapsed through the roof on fire. It was just really something else.
Most definitely. You know, that was my first thought. I said, we take for granted some things will be around forever and ever. And you don't know the minute that something like that can happen to a historical monument that touches us all. I didn't have that opportunity, but several of my friends was posting this morning their pictures that they were able to take when they were able to go. And I was like, oh, my, those pictures are priceless now. Because although the effort will be, you know, this mass undertaking is going to happen to put the building back together again, but it is not going to be with that same material that you saw that it took over 100 years to build. Those pictures are priceless.
And I heard on the news this morning or last night where someone was saying they had actually taken a picture of someone in front of the cathedral where not too long before the fire broke out, there was this man playing with his daughter, and it was a cute picture. And they were like, I wish I knew who that was and how to get this picture to this man and his daughter, you know, because they probably had no idea what was about to happen. You know, and it would be something for them to cherish, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about trying to find my pictures. I have no clue where they are, even if the pictures are much different now than they were back then. I'm not going to say how long ago. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
you know, some pictures don't keep as well as others. You know, they get yellowed and faded and stuff like that. But I would love to try to. It's an incentive for me to start digging. But it's also an example, and we've got to go, but an example of how your priorities can change in a blink of an eye, because
mm-hmm.
the French president was going to speak on something else that was more controversial, and all of a sudden, he's having to speak now on the loss of this treasure, not total loss. They managed to save the two towers, and they said the cross and the altar were still in place. So,
mm-hmm.
like they say, it's not the first time they will have had to be rebuilded, and they were working on it anyway. So, but they've had hundreds of millions of dollars already pledged in terms of donations for this. And this one person, I think, said that they were going to give $233 million or something like that.
Yeah.
This one person. So, you know, but yeah, your artifacts, your historical landmarks and everything, whatever you can do to save it, you know, and there are historical grants out there too. Just remember that too. That's what one of the things they're getting for this marker in Ocoee. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you've got a piece of history in your city, in your town, if you want to preserve, you know, by all means do that, you know, because you never know what's going to happen. Thank you, Stephanie. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Lady G, and have a wonderful day and enjoy
you
the
too.
Sunshine.
And maybe see you tonight. This
yes,
is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I hope to see a lot of y'all tonight at St. Mark. And have a blessed day, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.